The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Oh, second base, what are we going to do with you? Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Tuesday, October 13th. Frank Stanfield alongside Scott White, and I'll say we have an interesting show ahead of us. Interesting is the word that I'll use as we try and figure out what went wrong with Ketel Marte and Jose Altuve in 2020. Good luck to us. Scotty Dubs, how's it going, man? Another congrats. Every time we show up here, I'm congratulating you on the Atlanta Braves advancing further in the postseason, and hopefully that just keeps happening. What's going on, Scott? Your Braves are in the NLCS.
Yeah, hopefully it keeps happening. I would still bet against it. I would bet against them getting past this round. Of course, I would have bet against them getting past the Reds, too. So what do I know? I am not a gambling expert, clearly. But we'll see. I'm feeling good about this postseason run they're on. It's been a long time since they've had any smidgen of postseason success. I was in high school, Frank. 2001. It was a different time.
Scott, would you like to know where I was in 2001?
Well, you were younger than high school. You were probably elementary school, right?
I think I was in fifth grade, Scott.
This
is crazy. Oh man, yeah,
you don't even know what a successful Braves postseason team is. You don't know such a thing.
I mean, I remember some of the '90s, obviously Yankees and Braves World Series. I was young, remember parts of them, but obviously wasn't old enough to really comprehend, and I haven't really gone back and watched, if I'm just being completely honest. And yes, I'm still wearing the Yankee hat here, and they have been eliminated. Scott, we haven't heard this in a while.
Oh my goodness gracious, of all the dramatic things I've ever seen.
Yep, you tell them, Susan. Were you watching the game Friday when Aroldis Chapman gave up the go-ahead home run to Mike Brosseau? It was the ultimate revenge factor. And honestly, Scott, it was a fantastic series of baseball. It was high-level entertainment, and I don't know that you could say that about every series of baseball, but I'm not even salty. The Rays are a really good team. They have awesome pitching, and they came up in the clutch, so I don't really have any complaints when it comes to the Yankees losing to the Rays.
Yeah, now the Rays are up 2-0 on the Astros.
Let's go.
I'm sure every non-Astros fan is excited about. I got to admit, I kind of would like the Astros to keep going just for the chaos factor, but I think most people are rooting against them.
Before we start with the second base position, go back to Tampa Bay just for a second, Scott. Randy Arozarena is quite the talk right now in the fantasy industry, and they have these early mock drafts going on. Thanks again to Justin Mason. There are 9 of these early mock drafts taking place right now. They are 15-team roto drafts, and the ADP is being collected by, I believe it's Smata Plays Fantasy. I'll find his tag on Twitter. But you could find the ADP at his Twitter page. And Randy Arozarena's ADP is 116, Scott. So people are getting excited about this postseason run. He's 15 for 35. He's batting .429 with 4 home runs, just ahead of Jorge Soler and Byron Buxton in these mock drafts. I mean, how much should we take away from just a really hot postseason run? He is a legit prospect, so we should take that into account. And we talked him up a little bit throughout the course of the season, but some early thoughts on Randy Arozarena.
So where did you say he was going on average?
116, which is just ahead of Jorge Soler and Byron Buxton in terms of the outfield position.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, the facts. Heading into game two of the ALCS, Eros Arena, between the regular season and the postseason, he had 11 home runs in 95 at-bats. And I think like three steals too. So it's not like he was a zero there. He has a 95. His sprint speed is 95th percentile. It was this year, according to StatCast. So obviously if you buy into him being a power hitter, the fact that there's some speed there, I mean, that would create some enthusiasm in 5x5 leagues, especially. I'm skeptical. Color me skeptical, Frank. This feels a little like Kyle Lewis last year, Shane Spencer, you know, a couple decades ago.
Shane Spencer.
If you're just thinking the power breakthrough. I mean, you say he's a legit prospect. He was, Baseball America had him 10th in the Cardinals situation, in the Cardinals organization. This was before he got traded to the Rays, obviously. 10th in the Cardinals organization coming into this year, behind guys like Elijuris Montero, Lane Thomas, who was like a fourth outfielder type for the Cardinals. Andrew, oh, I didn't even know how to say his name. That catcher, Knizner.
If you can't say his name, probably.
Guys who were not really feeling are impact players. And Baseball America ranked Eros Arena behind all of them. 45 is what they gave him for power, a 45 grade. That is below average. And here he is hitting 11 home runs and 95 at bats. The plate discipline hasn't been very good this year. He was a pretty low strikeout guy in the minors, but it hasn't been very good this year. The launch angle wouldn't lend itself to big power, and he doesn't have a particularly good fly ball rate. You know, I'm not the sort of person who likes to rule out anything for anybody, really. So if the price was right on Eros Arena, I would be happy to buy in, kind of like Luke Voit 2 years ago when he had that crazy power run after getting traded to the Yankees and nobody really cared. Everybody was just sure it was a fluke. So if everybody was sure this was a fluke for Eros Arena, I would flip right around and say, well, maybe it's not. Maybe we should invest in him late just to see what happens. But based on that ADP, I mean, that's not too much later than like Luis Robert was going this year. And that seems, that's too aggressive for me.
What did you say that power grade was according to Baseball America, Scott?
45.
45. Well, that was probably before they knew Eros Arena contracted COVID. And while he was quarantined for a month, he only ate rice and chicken and did 300 push-ups a day. So I'm not sure that Baseball America was accounting for this. It's a crazy story, and I've read about it. I've heard them talk about it on the broadcast. Like 300 push-ups a day. Scott, how many push-ups do you think you could do in one go?
In one go?
Yeah.
Like a day? Like if it was a day, I could probably do one on the hour. But real, like good push-ups,
good push-ups. Like right now, if I was just like, Scott, get down and give me your max
military grade push-ups, you're back in a perfect angle. Maybe 20.
All right. I mean, that's not bad.
It's been a long time since I've tried. I'm sure there was a point in my life when I could do 20.
That's not bad. But I'm probably around 22. It used to be better, but I'm out of shape at this point. But all of this is to say how impressive 300 push-ups is per day.
Of course, sounds unrealistic.
And apparently, frankly, like, he put on like 15 pounds of muscle throughout this. Yeah. Anyway, Randy Arozarena is mashing throughout the postseason right now. People are already getting excited in these early mock drafts. You've heard some crazy comparisons. The broadcast has talked about Kevin Cash calling him the Cuban Mookie Betts. People have compared him to Marcelo Ozuna with speed. Kevin Kiermaier, his teammate, went as far as to say, quote, he's the best player on the planet regarding Randy Arozarena. So the hype is getting out of control, and I just wanted everybody to know that right now. He looks like a good player, but, you know, going right around 100, I don't know if I can get behind that. All right, Scott, before we get into the second base position again, I do just want to point out that we have kind of figured some things out regarding position eligibility for the 2021 season that I think some people should know. So if you'd like to explain what we are doing and how we are handling those positions, position eligibility for 2021, please.
Yeah.
Tell us now.
Yeah, I started pressing on the issue because I was, you know, beginning to make rankings. Nobody wanted to think about baseball, fantasy baseball this time of year. But a bunch of us got together in a Zoom call and we decided that instead of the usual 20 games to retain eligibility from one season to the next, because the season was so short and so few players would begin next year multi-eligible with that rule, it will instead be 10 games. If a player played 10 games at a position in 2020, they will carry over that eligibility into next year. That's for position players, obviously. For starting pitchers, it'll be 3 starts. They get starting pitcher eligibility, 5 relief appearances to have relief pitcher eligibility. So more or less cut in half from the usual standard. And you know, that's not perfectly proportional, but it's close enough. And I think it prevents us from going the other way and having, you know, out of control eligibility. And it does make, it's kind of amazing. I was going through some of the positions, how many players got exactly 10 games at a certain position.
There is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course that means now Cody Bellinger is going to be eligible at first base. It means Whit Merrifield's going to be eligible at second base. So we've already kind of done a quick look at those positions. DJ LeMahieu now eligible at first base. So, you know, you get a new second and third in my first base rankings, Freddie Freeman, followed by Bellinger, followed by LeMahieu. And then comes Jose Abreu and Luke Voit. Mike Moustakas is going to be eligible at first base now. At second base, we're doing second base today, so I don't have to go over that, I guess.
Yeah, no, but it's relevant that we bring it up now because we're going to talk about a few of these players. And you mentioned Whit Merrifield will have second base eligibility, as will Jeff McNeil. Max Muncy will still have second base eligibility as well. So definitely relevant to bring that up. And I know some people have been asking. So again, 10 games played in 2020 will allow a player to have that position eligibility in 2021, 3 starts for a starting pitcher, and 5 relief appearances for a relief pitcher. Scott, let's jump into these early second base ranks. And number one at the position, I think we had a little bit of a debate towards this at the, not really debate, but discussion towards the end of the season about who would be the first second baseman in your rankings. And so far you have who at number one?
At second base?
Yes.
DJ LeMahieu, and I don't think there's really any room for debate here. He was, you know, as unexpected as his breakout was in 2019, he went far beyond that this year. He was just unbelievable. The power production was still there. He ended up with an OPS over 1,000 after 893 last year. You know, he had 364. Tops in the majors, which obviously wouldn't be sustainable over a full season, but the bottom line is he didn't even take half a step back. If anything, he looked a little better. And so that should really give us a lot of assurance that this is just who he is now. He's going to be a free agent this offseason. Of course, we'd like to see him go back to the Yankees. That park seems to suit him. And of course, batting at the top of that lineup would be good thing for anybody, but I think there's such a big gap between LeMahieu and number two here, especially given all the second basemen that underperformed this year, that it's just like, if there's anybody you're going to target for position scarcity reasons, I think DJ LeMahieu is the guy.
Yeah. And the fact that he plays first and second base, you know, first, not a great position. Second base, as we're going to talk about this whole episode, is still not really a great position. Overall, the last 162 games played for DJ LeMahieu, a .335 batting average, 35 home runs, 130 runs scored, 110 RBI, and 6 steals. The guy is just insane. Ever since he's joined the Yankees, he will be 32 years old at the start of the 2021 season. Scott mentioned that he is a pending free agent, so hopefully he goes back to the Yankees. That's where he would have, you know, I think probably the best value for him from a fantasy perspective. He's got that short porch in right field. He hits line drives that way. He can go to all fields. And of course, just leading off for that lineup gives him so much run production as well. Scott, number two for you, Well, before we talk about it, who is your number two ranked second baseman?
It's Ozzie Albies. And it really doesn't feel like that much of a stretch because he came back so strong from the wrist injury. You look at some of the underlying numbers, like, you know, strikeout rate was high, the expected stats kind of low, but they got pulled down by that wrist injury too. And I just think he didn't have enough time to correct those. The base stats ended up looking pretty good because he was so hot when he came back. And of course he contributes across the board, really, in a 5x5 context, batting average, not a huge home run hitter, but enough. And he steals some bases and just is, you know, he's useful across the board. Now, he finished it. This kind of shows you the gap between him and LeMahieu. Ozzie Albies had 3.14 fantasy points per game. And I know these are 5x5 rankings, but it's easier to compare with fantasy points per game. 3.14 for Albies. DJ LeMahieu was 3.97. Huge difference. I think second at the position was actually Brandon Lau at 3.32. No, actually second at the position was Dylan Moore, who's not in my top 12. He was 3.43. But still, you know, everybody way behind DJ LeMahieu with 3.97.
Yeah, I don't think you can make the case for drafting Ozzie Albies ahead of DJ LeMahieu in a points league. The past 3 years, head-to-head points per game for LeMahieu, rounding up 4.0, 3.7, and 3.0 for LeMahieu. The past 3 years for Ozzie Albies, 3.1, 3.4, and 3.0 as well. So I don't think you can make the case for Albies to go ahead of LeMahieu in that format. But maybe in a roto context, guy, you wouldn't even consider it because Ozzie Albies can at least give you those steals. His last 162 games played 15 steals compared to just 6 for LeMahieu. We know that's not a really big part of his game. And according to this early ADP across these 9 drafts, Ozzie Albies 30.8 ADP, DJ LeMahieu 35.4. So Albies is actually the number one second baseman being drafted in these early mock drafts.
And I want to do it. Last 2 years, Ozzie Albies 271 batting average, 295 batting average. Last 2 years, DJ LeMahieu 364 batting average, 327. You know, maybe he gets a dozen more steals than LeMahieu, but I will look for that in other places.
Yeah, I think I agree with you too. Like, I love Ozzy, and everyone knew that coming into the season. I think you kind of throw 2020 out because of, you know, he was dealing with the right wrist contusion. He only played in 29 games. Again, this is Ozzie Albies, but hit 271, 6 homers, 21 runs scored. You know, solid for Albies when he played this year, but I think you're probably looking at a 270 to 280 hitter for Albies, and I still feel pretty safe with saying LeMahieu is going to at least bat over 300. I mean, and that could push closer to like 330 as we've seen the past couple of seasons. So you sacrifice some steals, but you get a huge, huge difference in batting average. So I tend to agree. I would still lean LeMahieu over Ozzie Albies in these early rankings.
Plus, there's a run in RBI difference too, especially if he's back with the Yankees. Albies for most of this year batted in the lower, batted like fifth or sixth, you know, which obviously isn't as good as batting leadoff for the Yankees. We'll see where DJ LeMahieu goes, but I suspect he'll be at bat in the upper third of the lineup regardless.
Scott, your number three second baseman for 2021 after DJ LeMahieu and Ozzie Albies is...
I had to add him in there because it's Whit Merrifield, who, if we went by the 20-game standard, would not be eligible at second base. Those of you who play in commissioner leagues on CBS, you'll have to... Sounds like you'll have to manually adjust your eligibility rules if you want to go with the standard... what we're treating as the standard 10 games for this year. But that would make Whit Merrifield second base eligible. And it turns out reports of his demise were greatly exaggerated. He rebounded in basically every way. He rebounded as a power hitter. Most importantly, he rebounded as a base stealer, was 12 for 15 after going 20 for 30 in a full 162 games last year. Got back to running a lot and got back to being more successful with, and it looks like that part of his game isn't going away. Was still among the league leaders in line drive rate, even though first time in 3 years he hit under 300, but it was overall better production with the power up, the speed up, and yeah, still looks like he has a lot left in the tank. So still a high-end performer at a thin position.
For those of you that have listened to Fantasy Baseball Today all of 2020, first of all, thank you. But as long as I've been here, the one thing that I will always do, and I strive to do, is, you know, hold myself accountable. If I get something wrong, I will call myself out for it and try and figure out how to be better as a result. You know, what did I learn from this situation? And I was wrong about Whit Merrifield. I think a lot of people kind of, you know, were skeptical about him. He had slowed down in the second half of the 2019 season. He was getting up there in age. He's honestly put all that to rest for me. He will be 32 years old at the start of the 2021 season, but I have no issues with him. 282 batting average, 9 home runs, 38 runs scored, 30 RBI, 12 steals in 60 games in this shortened season, and he has missed just 4 games over the last 3 seasons. This guy is an Ironman. He is going to play, and he plays for a team that is going to run. Between him and Adalberto Mondesi, the Royals, you know, I worried a little bit about Mike Matheny. Was he going to let these guys run as much as Ned Yost had let the Royals run in the past? And no issues there either. So he's going to continue to run. The StatCast numbers say that his sprint speed still remained consistent where it has been the past couple of seasons. Line drive rate consistently high, 25.7% since the start of the 2018 season. That is second among all qualified hitters behind only Freddie Freeman. So I think there's still a lot to like about Whit Merrifield. His early ADP, 43.4. Scott, I might make the case, and as much as I like Albies, that if I can get Whit Merrifield 15 picks later, I kind of like that value more.
Yes, I would agree. I would expect Merrifield to deliver the higher steals total next year. I might give him a slight edge in batting average too. That's basically a toss up. I would give Ozzie Albies a slight edge with the power, and obviously he has the better supporting cast. But I mean, honestly, Merrifield's production feels a little more bankable.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's delivering more of the scarcer category, the stolen bases. And for what it's worth, head to head points per game, 3.29 for Merrifield, 3.1 for Albies. If Albies was healthy all season, it probably would have been closer. But Merrifield was better than him in that format too.
Yeah, and I'm not just burying Albies. Like, I still like him. It's just this early price tag. If it remains in this third round range, Albies is a safe player. But again, I can get Whit 15, 20 picks later. I might actually be more interested in doing that. So something to pay attention to in this early offseason. All right, Scott, how much time do you have? Because number 4 and 5 in your rankings here, this can take a little bit of time trying to figure out what went wrong with these gentlemen in 2020, and they are
Ketel Marte and Jose Altuve, both in the top 5, which tells you a little bit about how the rest of second base shapes up. But the more I looked at these two, the harder it was to figure out exactly what went wrong for them. I mean, Ketel Marte, his average exit velocity, his average launch angle were both just very slightly off from 2019. They were much better than the rest of his career. Like the 2020 version of Ketel Marte looked much closer to the 2019 version than any previous version that we'd seen. And then as for Altuve, I mean, he wasn't great in terms of exit velocity or launch angle in the first place. So his weren't that different either. He struck out more, but he didn't strike out a ton. And I don't know. There weren't dramatic enough changes to either player's batted ball profile to support the idea of like a collapse here, a bottoming out like we saw. And I know Ketel Marte didn't get as much attention as the Ozzie Albies one, but he had his own wrist issue over the course of the season. I remember before the start of the season, I don't think I'm thinking way back to spring training. I think I'm thinking of summer camp. He was hitting home runs then. He finished with 2, right? Ketel Marte did.
Yep.
So I remember being encouraged by how he was performing in the preseason, thinking, all right, this guy's going to be fine. He had his own wrist issue, and maybe that explains his situation. You know, with Altuve, you saw it throughout the Astros lineup. You wondered if they were just putting too much pressure on themselves to back up their claims that, you know, it didn't really help them that much. The sign stealing scandal, you know, there's a lot of talk about how they felt like they were being treated unfairly, which, you know, whether or not you think it's right for them to say that, that seems to be how they felt. And you could understand how that would put pressure on you. Baseball's a weird sport where the harder you try, the worse you seem to do, you know?
Yeah.
And so we saw that throughout the Astros lineup. George Springer ended up salvaging his statistics, but Altuve, Bregman, you know, a lot of the high profile hitters, Correa, they really underachieved during the season. And then, you know, a lot of those guys, Correa especially, have come bouncing back here in the postseason.
So the first and potentially only good thing that I'll say about Ketel Marte is that when we're recording this October 12th, it's his birthday. So happy birthday, Ketel Marte. He turns 27 years old. And now for the bad, Scott. I don't want to completely bury the guy because he still makes a lot of contact. He struck out just 10.8% of the time. Again, this is Ketel Marte.
Yeah, more than ever this year, yeah.
But it seems like one of these things is not like the other, and it's that 2019 season. And there was a juice ball in 2019. You look at his OPS over the past five seasons, starting in 2016 for Ketel Marte, 610, 740, 768, 981, 732. His home run to fly ball ratio went from 19% in 2019 to 3.8%. Now, is that all juice ball related? Does it have to do with his wrist injury that, you know, he couldn't lift the ball with power? Potentially, but I don't know that I'm going to want to pay the price in 2021 to find out. And as of now, that price is a seventh round pick for Ketel Marte, which is not egregious. But his early ADP in these mock drafts is 78.2 across these nine drafts. But it just seems like 2019 was the clear outlier. So I'm a little bit more skeptical of Ketel Marte. And then Jose Altuve.
Go
ahead. You can speak on Ketel Marte if you want to.
I don't know that I'd pay a seventh round price tag for Ketel Marte either.
Okay.
Part of the reason I rank him fourth is because I have to rank somebody fourth. And while there may appear to be more obvious candidates,
there's really not. It's a bad position.
There's two specifically that might seem more obvious: Kevin Biggio and Brandon Lau. But they have some pretty big red flags that I'm not terribly motivated to rank them this high either. And we'll get to that soon, I'm sure. But I don't know that I want to, you know, I have to rank somebody fourth. I would probably want a bigger discount for Ketel Marte too. But I think there comes a point where the upside there is worth pursuing over, over a lot of other options you could get at second base. And remember, he had a pretty, like his final 4 months of 2019 as well were pretty impressive. 2018 is what I meant to say.
Yeah, it was heading into the 2019. Yeah, he started to break out in the second half of the 2018 season, heading into the 2019 season.
The final 4 months of 2018, so the final two-thirds of the season, he had 13 home runs, which, you know, obviously wasn't the pace he performed at in 2019, but, you know, it suggests that he might be not far off from like an Ozzie Albies, you know, even if we're throwing 2019 out. And by the way, I feel like, you know, the 2 month sample from 2020 versus the 6 month sample of 2019, I mean, what should count for more? I understand the reason for, I understand why there's a lot of skepticism for Ketel Marte now. I think it's fair, but I think it's too soon to conclude that 2019 was a fluke. I think there's evidence that suggests there were other issues he had in 2020, and And yeah, I don't think it's as clear as he was this guy for this 1 year, and then the year after he was the same as he was the year before. For what I pointed out, I mean, average exit velocity, average launch angle, were both closer to 2019.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a fluke, and that's probably not fair, but it might turn out to be a career year. We just don't know yet. Obviously, yeah. He's still in his prime at 27 years old, but I would probably bank on him not approaching a near 1,000 OPS again. You know, maybe he can get that back over 800, maybe even approach 900, but that's just something we'll have to see in 2021. And Jose Altuve, I mean, I had him as a bust entering the season. I saw some things with the plate discipline that I didn't like in 2019, the strikeouts starting to climb a little bit, the walk rate coming down. So plate discipline starting to slip. He had dealt with some knee injuries the past couple of seasons, some hamstring injuries. He wasn't really running anymore. So I was worried about those things with Altuve. And then we had this cheating scandal that happened in the offseason. And I heard the broadcast talking about this. And, you know, we can't really quantify something like this, but apparently, like, they talk about him being a sensitive guy and, you know, that all this criticism could have gotten to him throughout the course of the season. And it just seems like he wasn't the player that he had been basically his whole career in 2020, because he hit 219. He had a career high 18% strikeout rate. He was chasing more pitches than ever before. A 250 BABIP batting average on balls in play. He was a career 334, and this season he was 250. So it's just really hard to figure out what to make of Altuve. I will point this out, Scott. He hit 135 against breaking pitches in 2020, which, okay, that might have been something that was affected by some trash can usage, some cheating scandal. But what do you make? What do you make of Jose Altuve? Like, who is he at this point in his career? What do you make of 2020, if anything? Because he's performing well in the postseason now. He's like 9-for-31 with 3 home runs.
Yeah, I'll just sum up what I said, because that, like, I don't know. I don't know who he is anymore. But I know who he has been for a very long time, like a lock at the top of the second base rankings. And I know that the underlying data doesn't support the big drop off that we saw this year. So, you know, if he had just done this over a full 6 months, it'd be a different story. But over 2 months, particularly after a tumultuous offseason, yeah, if the price is right, I will lean glass half full there. And I don't know, what is his ADP in those early mock drafts?
What if I told you it was 113? Compared to 78 for Ketel Marte?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I mean, that sounds like a good gamble to make there in the midpoint of the draft.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, that's quite the discount. Might be something that we can get in on heading into next season. We're going to take a quick break. I just want to remind everyone that we have a new soccer podcast. Want to welcome a new show to the CBS Sports podcast family, Que Golazo, Q-U-E. G-O-L-A-Z-O is a daily soccer podcast that aims to bring you the best analysis and commentary from the world's game. They'll have gambling previews and immediate match recaps and react to all the latest news from the Champions League to the Premier League to Americans in Europe and everything in between. It's truly a must-listen if you're a soccer fan. This Wednesday, which is October 14th, the team will be releasing their first full episode to recap the international break, but you can go subscribe now to Que Golazo on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere else podcasts are found. When we come back, we will take a look at the rest of Scott's top 12 second base ranks for the 2021 fantasy baseball season.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, Scott, we're 35 minutes in, and we've got to 5 second basemen. That's obviously my fault. So give me the next two here. Who do you have at 6 and 7 at the second base position?
Number 6 is Kevin Biggio. Number 7 is Keston Hiura. Kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. One of them performed. One didn't. One, I really worry about a lack of upside for, and one I think has a ton of upside. So yeah, Biggio is kind of, you know, if Ketel Marte and Jose Altuve, I looked at the underlying numbers expecting to be underwhelmed and wasn't, Kevin Biggio was the other way around. I looked at the supporting numbers there and was like, wow, how did this guy
Statcast have the success hates this guy, did? Scott. Statcast hates Kevin Biggio.
Hates him. 215 XBA.
Ugh.
347 X slug.
Mm-mm.
That is pitiful. Pitiful, pitiful, pitiful. Now he walks a lot and he cut down on his strikeouts quite a bit.
Yeah. Like he made improvements.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised how bad the Statcast data was. And if this was 2 years ago before I really looked at that kind of stuff, maybe I'd be hyping Kevin Biggio to the hills, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe I still should be. I don't know. But those are so bad, it gives me pause. And he just seems like a guy who sells out very hard for home runs and doesn't make particularly hard contact. And so you really can't expect much of the way of batting average. And, you know, for getting off to a hot start with the home runs, he ended up hitting just 8 in 60 games. So that translates to what, a little more than 20 over a full season. He did have 6 steals also, which, you know, what translates to like 15 over a full season. So it wasn't great home run and steals production. It was pretty good. It was certainly starter worthy in a 5x5 league. And the fact that he walks a lot, I mean, that helps mask some of his shortcomings. But I think there's a clear limit to the ceiling here, and I think he's basically maxed out that ceiling. Like, I don't think there's another step forward for Biggio to take without really overhauling his profile. And I think it's very likely he takes a step back.
And again, Scott had Kevin Biggio at number 6, and he had Keston Hiura at number 7. Keston Hiura, who will be just 24 years old when the 2021 season starts, hit .212 with 13 home runs, 30 runs scored, 32 RBI, and 3 steals in 2020. His first 143 games for Keston Hiura, 32 home runs, 12 steals. So, look, the power-speed combination is enticing, but Scott, this strikeout rate for Keston Hiura is very, very worrisome. Nearly 35% strikeout rate. Was 5th highest among qualified hitters, and his 20.3% swinging strike rate was 2nd among qualified hitters behind only Luis Robert. So that kind of play discipline, it does worry me about Keston Hiura.
So there were my two biggest thoughts on Hiura coming into this season is, okay, looking at his minor league track record, his strikeout rate is likely to improve. And even if it doesn't, he impacted the ball so hard as a rookie that it probably won't matter. Well, the strikeouts actually got worse, and he didn't impact the ball nearly as hard. It was a 2-month sample. He does have a very good prospect pedigree, like, you know, one of the best hitting prospects in baseball before he got called up. So certainly not going to write him off over an ugly 2 month sample, but it was ugly. And I'm not going to enter next year with a lot of confidence in Hira. I think it's worth devoting your second base spot to his upside. I have him seventh. So, you know, clearly it's very likely I'm the one who ends up doing it if I have him as my seventh ranked second baseman, but it won't be with a lot of confidence. That's basically it.
Yeah, the quality of contact came down tremendously for Kesson Hira too. So not only was he striking out more, but when he was making contact, the average exit velocity went from 91 miles per hour in 2019 to 87. So that is a huge drop in quality of contact for Hira. His early ADP is right around 70, so that's the sixth round of a 12-team league. Kevin Biggio is
no.
Right.
No, that sounds like about where he was going this year. What the heck? Where? What was it this? Let me look at it.
I think first. This year was a little, it was like fourth, fifth round entering 2020. So I guess people are just not putting much stock into it, and they still see upside based on that prospect pedigree. And then Kevin Biggio is 67.3, so in the sixth round, Scott. It seems like as of now, Jose Altuve is looking like probably the biggest value.
Yeah, it seems like I'm the weirdo ranking ranking Marte and Altuve ahead of Biggio and Hira, which means I'm probably going to have a lot of Marte and especially Altuve. Of course, this is nine drafts we're talking about here.
Yeah.
After most of these people, I doubt they've gone that in depth because, you know, most of these people double dip with football and they're most of their attention is probably on football right now. But I suspect when they take a closer look at that might play out a little differently.
Scott, you have Max Muncy at number 8 in your second base ranks. We spoke about him a little bit on our first base preview, so you could go back and listen to that. But who do you have just behind Max Muncy, let's say at number 9 and 10 in your second base ranks?
9 is Mike Moustakas and 10 is Jeff McNeil. For what it's worth, McNeil and Muncy both would not be second base eligible if we hadn't lowered it to 10 games. So it helps having them at this position. McNeil's a really weird case because there was some skepticism about his power breakthrough in 2019 coming into this year. He ended up only hitting four home runs. He hit them in four consecutive games in early September, and no home runs in any of the other games. So that was weird. He still looks like a really good contact hitter. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know where he stands as a power hitter now. Like, it's not like last year was the first demonstration of power ever from Jeff McNeil. He had a pretty good power breakthrough 2 years ago in the minors before his call-up. So I think there's a good chance he can be a 20-homer guy still over a full season, but there's obviously more doubt about that now than there was coming into 2020. And as you know, if he ends up being kind of a more expensive version of David Fletcher, that's going to be disappointing, obviously.
Yeah, for Jeff McNeil. Continue, Scott.
As for Moustakas, who I actually rank ahead of McNeil, it might be flipped in a points league. I haven't decided for sure yet. But Moustakas seems like he was Moustakas. We just got the worst outcome of Moustakas instead of the best outcome for Moustakas. But he looked like he was the same player. Maybe over 6 months, those numbers would have normalized a little. He's a guy who doesn't have a particularly wide range of outcomes, but when he ends up hitting more like 230 than 260, that's how it goes. And that's how it went in 2020. But I think Moustakas is fine, just not terribly exciting, but fine.
Yeah, and I would say just the biggest difference between Moustakas' 2019 and his 2020 was his strikeout rate. So career high 22% strikeout rate this past season in only 2 months while he was also dealing with a quad injury, so he was on and off the IL throughout the course of this abbreviated season. But the previous 2 years, that strikeout rate was at 16.8% in 2019 and 16% in 2018. So that's, you know, if he's not striking out that extra 6%, then we're probably seeing him closer to that 250 batting average where he is routinely at. And still really good ballpark to hit in Cincinnati for Mike Moustakas. Early ADP 142, the 12th round. I mean, he's not terribly exciting, but that seems like a decent fallback option just early on here. Yeah. Looking at this for Mike Moustakas. The one thing that I noticed about him, looking at his Statcast numbers, Scott, he saw an 11% increase in breaking pitches from pitchers this year, and he hit just 100 against them. So it could be something where pitchers kind of figured something out, a hole in his swing, and they started throwing more breaking pitches, and he obviously didn't do well against them. So just something to pay attention to. It caught my attention. That is for Mike Moustakas. And then Jeff McNeil, he basically just had a bad first month each of the past two seasons, Scott, where it's like last year, I believe it was April, where he just, he had like a sub 700 OPS, and then it was really good the rest of the way. And this year, just so happens that it's a two-month season, so if you're not good for the first month, it's probably going to affect your overall numbers. But the last 162 games for McNeil, 310 batting average, 26 home runs, 91 runs, 87 RBI, 5 steals. It's a pretty good player. Pretty good player, Jeff McNeil. And he is, he'll be 29 years old at the start of the 2021 season. So I don't think either one of these guys are exciting, but they're fine.
I feel like McNeil has the higher ceiling. If he gives you, if he is a true power hitter, I mean, like a 20 homer guy, 20-25 homer guy.
Yeah, I mean, if he hits 20-25 with close to 300 batting average, yeah, I mean, that's
right.
That's
he's
pretty valuable.
Be competing for a batting title if he gets that many free hits on balls out of play, you know, to boost his batting average. Moustakas, you know, we know what Moustakas is, and like I said, it was the worst version of Moustakas in 2020, but it was still very Moustakas like.
All right, Scott, so let's round out these top 12. To this point, your top 10 second baseman, DJ LeMahieu, Ozzie Albies, Whit Merrifield, Ketel Marte, Jose Altuve, Kevin Biggio, Keston Hira, Max Muncy, Mike Moustakas, and Jeff McNeil. 11 and 12 in your rank, Scott. And I don't know, based on this early ADP, you might have to defend this number 11 second baseman, Scott. Who is it?
It is Brandon Lau. Doesn't surprise me. I feel like for pitchers especially, but for some degree hitters too, volume doesn't get the attention it should from a lot of fantasy analysts. Fact of the matter is Brandon Lau was a platoon player for most of September, sitting against almost every left-hander the Rays faced. And he didn't deserve to based on the splits. It's kind of like Max Muncy when he was first breaking through.
So weird, yeah. He had an 11.37 OPS against lefties, Scott. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure why the Rays decided to do that. It was a very uneven 2 months for Brandon Lau, where he was dreadful for the middle portion of the season. He kind of like Biggio, greatly improved the strikeout rate. So I'm encouraged by that. The expected stats, I think they back up. I got to pull up the profile here, but I think they more or less back up how he produced, right?
Yeah, Statcast likes him. 17% barrel rate was in the 98th percentile, 552 expected slug, 93rd percentile. So Statcast likes the quality of contact for Brandon Lau.
He ended up with 14 home runs in a very short season, and he had 3 stolen bases as well, which isn't bad, you know. It might be a double-digit steals guy over a full season, but if he ends up sitting consistently against left-handers, which is how things finished out, and of course the Rays love their platoons, I feel like it's a 60-40 split in terms of a player's fantasy value. 60% is how good he actually is, and 40% is how much he plays, and really pulls down Lau if you can't count on him getting consistent playing time. Maybe I overdid it here in these rankings and he'll kind of creep his way back up, but I don't think I want him unless he's discounted. So that's kind of what I was trying to demonstrate here.
And discounted he will not be, at least according to these early mock drafts. Got Brandon Lau with an ADP of, are you ready for this, 59.8, which is a borderline fifth, sixth round pick going ahead of Gleyber Torres, who does not have second base eligibility anymore, but going ahead of Kevin Biggio, Kesson Hiura, Ketel Marte, Max Muncy, Jose Altuve, all names that Scott has ahead of Brandon Lau. And this early ADP, Lau is going ahead of them. And I think that there are some things to like, but I do appreciate what you brought up regarding the playing time. And we should have mentioned it for Randy Arozarena at the top, too. Like, we don't know if Randy Arozarena is going to play every day. If he's as good as they're talking him up to be, you know, the next Mookie Betts, best player in the world, then yeah, they probably will play him every day. But I think it's something that's, it always kind of creeps into the back of your mind for Tampa Bay Rays players. It seemed like when Austin Meadows was healthy this year, he was an everyday player for them. So maybe they will kind of push Brandon Lau into that same stratosphere of player on their team. But I like the improvements, obviously lowering the strikeout rate. Last 162 games for Lau, 262 batting average, 34 home runs, 101 RBI, 8 steals from a second baseman. So there's a lot to be excited about, and StatCast likes him, but that price tag is pretty massive, Scott.
Yeah, I was just reading what I wrote for him in the my column showing my top 20 at second base, and I said I might rank him as high as third at second base. Probably should say fourth now that Whit Merrifield is eligible there. But that's how high I'd rank Lau if not for the playing time concerns. Yeah, I'll need some assurances from the Rays, I think.
Scott, number 12, old reliable, worth rounding out your top 12 second baseman here.
Robinson Cano, who I would rank higher than 12th if he wasn't going to be 38 next year. He had a pretty incredible season after I think most people were off of him coming into the year, decided he was already too old. He had a down numbers in 2019, obviously. But the underlying numbers and like how hard he impacted the ball, the strikeout rate, they all still look good. They all suggested that, you know, maybe the decline, we were making too much of it for Robinson Cano. And then he bounced back this year with an 896 OPS, batted 316, missed some time with an injury, still hit 10 home runs in 49 games. But part of the issue here with Cano is he was so hot early on that by the time everybody got him, got on board, got him in their lineups, he kind of let them all down. He had a 721 OPS in September and finishing with an 896 OPS. That shows you how hot he was there at the start of the season. So, you know, only 2 months to work with. Who knows what to make of it? I think he's pretty good still, but that's asking the month of August 2020 to do with the heavy lifting there. And he's going to be 38 next year. So I certainly wouldn't want to pay a premium for Cano. I'd be fine settling on him if just the value never lined up for me to take one of these other second basemen, most of which have some pretty big concerns in their own right.
A few names that just missed the cut. Tommy La Stella, Jake Cronenworth, who are just outside your top 12. They got moved down because of some of these new additions, because of the position eligibility. You can read about those on the site. Scott wrote it about his top 20 second basemen so far, and I will mention that Nick Madrigal also just missed that cut too, but he had shoulder surgery and will need 5 to 6 months of recovery, which brings us right around March, April. Still somewhat excited about him, obviously, for speed and batting average, but just keep that in mind when it comes to Nick Madrigal. It's, you know, pretty severe injury, and we've seen that affect hitters' production, specifically when it comes to shoulders, that first season back, Scott.
And a couple other slot ahead of him because they now have second base eligibility and it didn't look like they would at first. So I go, so basically 13 through 16, I go Tommy La Stella, Jake Cronenworth, then Chris Taylor, David Fletcher, and then Nick Madrigal. So, I mean, yeah, it's Madrigal and Fletcher are pretty close. I think they're pretty similar. The big question is, Madrigal, will he end up running a lot or will he end up running a little? He didn't run that much, the little bit we saw of him. And of course, now it's pretty easy to slot him behind Fletcher with that shoulder issue. Taylor's going to be interesting because Enrique Hernandez is a free agent. Taylor has just 1 year left. He was playing a lot to close out this season and did pretty well. So I think he might be somebody I'm pretty invested in, Chris Taylor, next year. We'll see how the offseason goes for the Dodgers, of course, but looks like he's lined up for a big role for them next year and will be dual eligible, second base, and shortstop. Might even have outfield. Not sure about that. I'll have to check that.
For Scott White, I am Frank Stanfill. We'll be back again on Thursday with our third base preview. I may or may not have already selected a special guest, so you'll just have to wait and see. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching FBT. We'll be back again on Thursday. Bye-bye.
If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.